Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan and I'm joined, as always, by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. And boy, we've got a lot going on in the sports world, Coach. And where do we start? College football, NFL, college basketball, NBA, Pacers on fire. Where do you want to even start?
Well, we need to start with telling our listeners about, well, we got all that stuff on the show today. Snow, winter storm, ice, sleet. We're like the mail. Nothing stops the Coach K and Joe Show from coming to you live. And so get out there, call your buddies, hook them up on the internet, tweet them. And most importantly, Joe, our listeners who are all over the country and literally internationally, via the internet, need to understand that they can participate in this show every week live or listen to the podcast. But if you want to ask a question, make a comment, get on Joe about something, which I don't blame you, feel free to do that. You can text me directly at 812-480-9449. You can tweet us at Coach K and Joe. You can Facebook message us at Coach K and Joe Show. You can call the show at 773-897-6325, or you can text Joe directly at
812-630-2449. Again, you might want to remember that, 812-630-2449, because I'm sure we'll have a lot of people wanting to possibly question what I have to say today about the movement, but that'll be later.
We do have a great show. We're going to be talking, Joe will be talking with Slick Weber about the 100 years of Jasper basketball coming up next Friday, I believe, celebrating 100 years since the first game at Jasper High School in Jasper, Indiana. We've got Hoosier basketball talk, Purdue basketball talk coming up. We've got a wonderful guest from the Bloomington Herald Telephone. He is the beat writer for the Hoosiers. He's coming up in our second segment, probably about halfway through the first hour of the show. Joe will touch on him a little bit more. We've got, obviously, everything going on with the ACC Big Ten Challenge. We'll talk, you know, Joe, we'll talk a little bit and the ACC and where we really see these conferences in basketball this year. Obviously, football, whether it's college football, you know, the people in Alabama, they just swear that they should still be in the hunt for the national title. And I'm not talking about have a chance on the outside looking in like Ohio State was a couple weeks ago, but they think they should be back in there either one or two. That's the arrogance of the Crimson Tide. And we'll talk a little bit about the BCS. Ohio State, the Ohio State Buckeyes, have worked their way back into a national championship game, Joe. And Auburn, the incredible touchdown at the end of the game off a missed field goal. That followed the incredible win against Georgia. So is Auburn a team of destiny? Or did they just have luck and that luck's about to fade? We'll talk about the BCS and who's on the outside looking in right now. And should Northern Illinois even be in the discussion? I don't know. I've seen them play a couple times on ESPN. I'm not sure they could play with any of the top 20 teams. But the way the computer and the rankings work, if you're a Northern Illinois fan or a MAC conference fan, you're pretty excited about that. And, of course, we've got NFL football. What has happened to the Colts? If Vinatieri couldn't kick field goals, I don't know, Joe, would the Colts in any other division, in any other situation, would the Colts even I don't know. Could they be a playoff team, a real contender at this point?
Well, you know, they're having their troubles right now, and as you might expect, I'm hoping for those troubles to last one more week at least. You know, this is a big game for the Colts. It's a big game for the Bengals. It'll have to do with seeding. If they both win their divisions, this could be a tiebreaker. And, if it would be a tiebreaker between them, those two, and the Patriots, the Bengals have already beat the Patriots. So, I mean, that would be a long way in getting the number two seed, which I'm sure would be a big thing, not having to face number one right away. So, Colts have their trouble.
With the conference the way it is, the division that the Colts are in, I mean, the Bengals have a little heat on them. But the Colts really are in a position to move on through and get into the playoffs. Of course, the Seahawks have already done that. We'll talk about that a little bit. Peyton and the Broncos continue to roll as long as it's not too cold. And my gosh, will we ever get rid of them? They just keep resurfacing. Those Patriots and Tom Brady, they won't go away. We also have high school hoops coming up. Harrison, if you follow Indiana high school hoops, you know that in the coaches poll, which it takes all the classes and puts them together, the IBCA coaches poll, Harrison High School of Evansville, which sports three brothers, one a senior point guard and twins at the forward spots, basically shooting guard and forward spot. They were number two ranked. They were beaten by Henderson County out of Henderson County, Kentucky, this past week. Their first loss in a young season. And I think we had the discussion about some of the high school teams just a little bit because the Indiana high school basketball season is really just getting started. And the snow didn't help with some of the games that would have been played tonight. They're pretty much all canceled south of Indianapolis. But Harrison took it on the nose, and one of the discussions that we've had is Harrison has a lot of talent, but it seems to be very perimeter-oriented. And we talked if Harrison was really going to be able to move forward in the tournament, get to that regional semi-state, and have a chance to contend at the state level in their 4A class, they were really going to have to find an inside-out game. They don't seem to have that yet. Of course, the Duncans, other than older brother, who's a senior, they're still young. They're still growing into their bodies. But if they are going to have a chance to move forward in the state tournament come March, they're going to have to really develop an inside-out game. We'll talk a little bit about high school basketball as we move forward on the show as well. So there is a lot to talk about on this snowy, icy, cold Friday. I know we've got some new listeners, first-time listeners today. I know most people wouldn't even think about it, but this might be a good time to go out and look at a new car or a used car out at Ubilor's. They probably got some four-wheel drives and some things that you might be able to use in this kind of weather. It's not going to stop. It's going to keep coming all weekend, but we do appreciate one of our supporters and advertisers, Ubilor & Sons Motor Company. They do a great job, Toyota, Chevy, you name it. They've got it, and they'll take care of you. So a lot to talk about here on this edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. How about the Yankees? They won't pay Cano, which they shouldn't, the kind of money he wants. But they pay catcher McMahon. I don't get it. A lot of money being paid out by the Yankees. Brian Cashman's going to cash himself out again. They didn't learn from A-Rod, and they certainly haven't learned from what the Angels did with Pujols. So you got to wonder about the money being spent. Fans, we keep paying for it. Let's face it. We keep putting the money out there. So as long as we'll put the money out there and we'll watch the games on TV, GMs are going to make stupid financial decisions. Cano, should he get $300 million? Absolutely not. If you're a Yankee fan, weigh in with us. Cano doesn't deserve that money. If he gets it, good for him. But that money's ridiculous. 7-year contracts, 10-year contracts, unless they're 23 or 24, it shouldn't happen. Because when they hit 32 or 33, unless they're on the juice, you're not going to get your money out of it. You're just not going to get your money out of it. Before we go to break, the Evansville Aces started out undefeated, I think 4-5-0. Tough stretch right now. Lost to the Hoosiers. Yeah, that was a tough loss. Lost to Ohio out of the MAC conference. Ohio's got a good team. And they lost the other night to Murray State. Murray State, not the Murray State team they've been the last couple years, but still very competitive out of the Ohio Valley. So the Aces have taken 3 state straight losses. I got a lot of confidence in Coach Marty Simmons, good friend of mine for years. I think he'll get the ship righted. He's got a nice combination of players, but there is some young talent in that group, and they're going to have to learn how to win at the Ford Center, of course, but they're going to have to learn to win on the road, and sometimes that can be tough, as the Hoosiers found out up at Syracuse, and we'll talk about IU. We'll talk about Purdue, and of course, Joe, if Purdue can play Siena 6 or 7 more times this year, they'll have a great year on the hoops court before they're done.
Oh, I don't want any more Siena. You know, that last game, I was so mad I didn't watch most of it. But I'll take a Boston College game. But before we do the debate, the IU-Purdue, I want to save all my ammunition of the movement, et cetera, for later. Because, you know, people need to stay in Zach. So I'm ready. I'm ready for you, Coach.
I'm just priming the pump, Joe. I mean, there's so much more that can be said. If you want to weigh in, if you want to get on Joe, if you want to get on the coach, Ken Schulteis, Coach K, text me at 812-480-9449. Tweet us at Coach K and Joe. Coach K and Joe Show on Facebook. Call into the show. We'll take your phone call. We'd love to have you on the show. 773-897-6325. Joe, let's go to break. When we come back, Joe will be talking with Slick Weber about the 100 years of Jasper basketball. So we're going to go to break, folks. A lot of show to go, an hour and 45 minutes to go of the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
This is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Uvalar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Hello, God.
Oh, my God, it's Madonna! I'm not worthy! I'm not worthy!
Garth, chill! Come on, take your Ritalin, okay? Garth, we're in Madonna's bedroom.
Whoa!
We're not worthy! We're not worthy!
Okay, shut up. You're both worthy.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan. I'll tell you what, Ed, if you're looking for a new or pre-owned car, go out and visit Uvalar & Sons in Jasper and Vincennes and tell them that the Coach K and Joe Show sent you. And speaking of we're not worthy, we now have the star of the 1972 regional game hit the free throws at the end Slick Weber, here to talk to us about the 100th anniversary of Jasper basketball. We're having an anniversary next Saturday night on December 13th. Slick, you there?
Yes, I am, Joe. Thanks for the kind words.
Hey, that's no problem. 100 years ago, the Jasper Wildcats were preparing. They're a little over a week, 8 days away from their first game against Jasper Academy, and we're going to celebrate that and all that is Jasper basketball next Saturday night, right?
Well, it should be a really special night, Joe, and as you know, you're a part of that crew that been put together by Coach Gable to make this a special night for Jasper basketball players and Jasper basketball fans. Before the game, before the varsity game between Jasper and Memorial, we're going to show a highlight film in the new gymnasium, which is just absolutely beautiful. They got a big pull-down screen there for all to see, and it's going to be a video of all the highlights throughout the year of the sectional championships, regional championships, state finalists, state championships, of course, the 49 team. You and your staff of videographers, I don't know if that's a word, put together a great video of what I've seen so far, and I know you got a little more work to do, but I tell you what, if you're a Jasper fan, that'll give you some goosebumps right there. And then up in the cafeteria during the all evening, there'll be like a little walk-through museum up there with there's five TVs up there with and we're going to break up the 100 years into like 20-year segments and have a running clip there of pictures, photographs, video, whatever we can get our hands on. And we're in the process of putting them all together now. And Jay there has been kind enough to donate some memorabilia from his dad and when he was coaching, the old uniforms and what have you, some pictures and what have you. So it should be a lot of fun for Jasper fans. I'll say that. I hope a lot. I hope that gymnasium is packed because 100 years is really special, and Jasper basketball has always been real special to me, as you know, Joe, and I think it's special to a lot of people, and I think they'll really enjoy the evening. Afterwards, after the varsity game, they're having a reception out at the DuBois County Museum. That is, and we'll have some refreshments and food out there, and it is open, and the museum will be open. They have a great sports section in there for DuBois County, and you can walk through there and see what they have there. If you've never been there, I highly suggest if you don't do it that night, do it some night when you're not doing anything or someday because it's really neat. It's really cool. So anyway, I want to thank you and Coach K for letting me speak about it.
Now, Slick, a little bit of basketball trivia for you. You're kind of the basketball guru. Who is the only player for the Jasper Wildcats to also win a section that won a sectional as a Jasper Wildcat that also coached Jasper to a sectional crown?
Well, that would be the one and only Coach K. 1981, he was on that team with Mike Ballinger and those guys. And that was one of the greatest basketball games in Jasper history. I was at that game sitting in the last row at Huntingburg Gym across from the student section. And Ballinger put on a show in the last 5 minutes. He probably scored, I think he scored 20 points in the last 5 minutes of that game. We were down by maybe 10 or 11. And I tell you what, when that gun went off, it was a wave of people running onto that floor from that student section. That was and you'll see some pictures that night of that floor after the game. It was a sea of black and gold, and that's what we love to see. So.
Were you also shocked when Coach K passed up a shot and put it behind the back pass for an assist?
You know, I think he was always a smart player, so he probably did the right move there. So
he liked to shoot the long shot, so he did hit one of those in that game too. Because I distinctly remember this. It's how many years has it been? People say I'm getting old, but my mind's still sharp. I remember him shooting the long bomb and yelling "No!" and then. Yeah!
You know. Yeah. You know, I think Kenny probably said that when I shot a long bomb to get that in that regional game. It was about 14, 15 seconds to go, and I'm sure probably 7,000 Jasper fans probably grabbed their head and say, "What is he doing?" But fortunately, it went in, and we went on to win the regional. But, you look back at some of those games, and I've you know, I've talked to you about some of these. That triple overtime is still one of the, is probably the greatest game I ever saw. Of course, Scott Rowland, when he unfortunately lost the game, but put on what he get 24-4, you know, 24 in the last 5 minutes of the game. There's so many games. You know, Nathan Story hit two free throws with 1.7 seconds to go to beat hated Vincennes and the ghost of Gunnar Wiedemann. That's always feeling good. But we'll have videos and all that. We're going to have pictures. We're going to have newspaper clippings up there. It should be really special. I hope the Jasper fans appreciate the efforts that Rick Bagley, yourself, Terry Tucker, Jared Brosmer, Coach Gable, Bernie Vogler, and I'll probably miss it, Greg Ackerley, put together. So far, one heck of a night, and I think it's just going to get better in this last week. So I'm really looking forward to it. We got some. I know Michael Lewis is coming back. I'm pretty sure Scotty's coming back. Farouk was coming back, and he may still. Some things are up in the air there. Ballinger has said he's going to try to make it. He has it confirmed. Yes or no? He's got two kids that play basketball. One's a freshman, and one's a fifth grader. So probably depends on their schedule. Mickey Sermersheim's coming over, 1947 All-Star. Bob Sockle, 1945 Hall of Famer. It should be a great night. It should be a wonderful, wonderful evening. We're going to introduce all those people at halftime of that varsity game. So you want to come back and live some old memories, it'll be a great night to do it.
Now, and we play Evansville Memorial, right? What time is game time?
The varsity game starts at 8. The door is probably open around 6. The actual, the showing of the video that you're putting together will be right when they'll come out, the varsity players will come out and warm up like they do. And usually when they go down to the dressing room, it's about, whatever, 4 or 5 minutes ago. We'll show that video, and that video probably will be like 9 or 10 minutes long. Joe, you're in that. And then at halftime, we're going to do the recognition of all the Hall of Famers, Silver Anniversary team members, and All-Stars. And then the actual walk-through museum up at the top at the cafeteria, that will be open all night for people to wander through and take a look at what we have. So it should be a great evening.
Okay, and what time do the doors open as far as, you know, as far as the when will the exhibit in the cafeteria start?
Yeah. That's a great question. They usually, the JV game starts at 6:30, and they usually open those doors at 6. They're contemplating probably opening them a little bit earlier, maybe quarter till or something like that, so in case people do want to go in there early. Because those, you know, every one of those 20-year segments will probably be videos of maybe, I don't know, 10 to 12 to 15 minutes long. And it's pictures of teams, players, and what have you. And so I would say, no later than 6, maybe 5:45, but they haven't made the, Andy Nava hasn't made the call on that yet. He's been great, too. We're going to have a dry run on Wednesday night, and Andy's going to come in there and make sure all the lights are working, computer stuff, graphics, and what have you. So I want to thank him also. And, of course, Coach John, he's put this all together, and he's headlined all this. So it's a great thing that he's doing.
Okay, Slick. Well, you know, thanks for joining us and let us. But yeah, we wanted to get the word out about the game, and I'm looking for a special evening. And I want to thank you and Rick and Jared and everybody for what you've done to make this come to life. So thanks a lot.
Hey, Joe.
And, Yeah, Coach.
I got one Coach? Quick question for Slick. Slick, how you doing
okay.
today, buddy?
Very good, Coach. How you doing?
You know, first of all. He's doing great, but first of all, on this snowy, icy, slick day, isn't it appropriate that we're talking to Slick Weber?
It's always appropriate to talk to Slick Weber. You know that.
Hey, I've got a quick question before we let you go. You know, I know this so much history in this tradition-rich program of Jasper basketball, whether it's the one class or the multi-class system. And the last few days I've been fielding questions, who's the best center at Jasper? Who's the best forward? You know, I'm going to ask you a couple, just one question. Somebody asked me the other day, in fact, yesterday I got a phone call, and they said, who is the best center to play at Jasper? Now, of course, I brought up Farouk, who I think was phenomenal. Strong, quick, could drop step and dunk the basketball. I brought up Wayne Bailey. You played with Wayne. I brought up Mike Leagers. Those are the three guys that I remember pretty well. And if you could just take a couple minutes and just talk about Wayne Bailey a little bit and maybe someone else that you saw growing up or that you heard about from a center position at Jasper.
You know, I did play with Wayne. I started with Wayne his senior year. I was a junior. A great basketball team. And I tell you what, he could do it all. I mean, he could shoot that 15-footer, which is a lost art, as you well know. And he could post up. Now, couldn't dunk. I don't think I ever saw Wayne dunk, but, of course, he didn't dunk as much back in those days as they do now because we just weren't as athletic, and that's a fact. But he was smooth as silk. You know, he broke the scoring record against Vincennes his senior year. He scored 47, I believe. I believe he broke Chesty's record. There's another guy you forgot to mention. But and it was a close game. I mean, it was a 7, 8, 9-point game. It's not like we were beating him by 20 and it kept him in or anything like that. But he was just smooth. I mean, he was a great force underneath to have. As a guard dribbling in there, I could always kick it to Wayne, and you know that 12-footer, 14-footer was automatic. And he asked me for somebody else, and of course Mike's older brother Chesty. You know, even though he never made the Indiana All-Star team, which has always been a mystery to me, he did make a national All-Star team. He played for the East down in I think it was in Houston, Texas. He was one of 10 or 12 players that played for. Like a McDonald's All-American team now. They picked Chesty to go down there. And back in the day, they had a north-south basketball game in Indiana, and they gave Chesty the number one to wear for the South. But yet I'm pretty sure a guy from Washington made the Indiana All-Star. So I've always been a mystery. I've tried to talk to Chesty about it. He's a pretty private person. So I don't know what happened there, but he was, if you go back through the record books, Chesty, Mike Leagers, Wayne Bailey, and Farouk would probably be your four on the Mount Rushmore centers. Now, you want to pick one of those, or, you know, your Farouk reference is better than mine. Chesty played all 4 years. Mike Leagers was just terrific. Mm-hmm. He went on and had a great college career. Well, that's a tough one. I played with Mike and I played with Wayne. So, you know, it must be the guard set these guys up and made it great. That's the way I love it, Kenny.
You know, Slick, the one thing that I would say about Wayne Bailey, for those who don't know, he played back in the early 70s. He went on to at least start a college career down in Texas for a short time. But the thing that I remember about Wayne is, and I referenced this, if he played today, he'd have no problem playing. He had that great outside shot, and as you said, very athletic, very quick. I think he'd probably be more of a four-man into what we would call a four-man in today's basketball, not really a center, because he could go out on the floor and do things with the basketball. Just a tremendous player. I don't know. Do you know anything about, like, Paul Huffman? Was he a center back in his day? I mean, he was the great player that went on to play at Purdue. Or was he more of a forward-type player?
I'm pretty sure. No, that's a good question. I always consider Paulie a forward, but I really – haven't researched that enough. You know, not only, you know, he was All-American at Purdue. I mean, he was Paulie Huffman. And I know Scott Rowan, Ballinger, Michael Lewis. Paul Huffman may be the best basketball player ever come out of Jasper High School. I know that's sacrilegious with a younger group. But you know, he was an All-American at Purdue. Went on to the NBA. He was named Rookie of the Year in the NBA. I mean, this guy, you know, he was – pulverizing Paul, as they called him. He must have been one heck of a force. But I would think he was a forward, and I agree with you with the assessment of Wayne. He liked to play with his he didn't play a lot with his back to the basket. He was more of a face the basket and make a move and hit that little jumper type thing. So I agree. I think he'd be a four.
Yeah, great stuff, Slick. I wish we had more time to talk. Maybe we'll have you on next week again, and we'll talk some more 100 years. Thanks for being on, Slick. Be careful out there. We know that Hediger Beverage has you working all the time. And, Keith, I talked to Keith yesterday, and we reminded him you're the number one guy there.
That's exactly right. Thanks. Hey, Coach, we will see you next Friday, won't you?
I'm 80% there. I'll be there.
Make that 100%. Make that 100%. That'd be a great evening.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking IU basketball, some football with Dustin Dporiak, the beat writer at the Bloomington Herald Telephone. I'm excited to talk to him. He's around the Hoosiers all the time. We're going to get the skinny on Coach Green and that young Hoosier basketball team. We're going to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper. We've all heard the commercial, 15 minutes could save you 15. Folks, let me tell you, it won't take 15 minutes for us to save you money. Give Ubelars a call at 1-800-937-USA1 or visit us online at ubelar.com. We'll tell you the facts, treat you right, no bait and switch, and best of all, we will save you money. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper, where customers send their friends for a lifetime of savings in 15 minutes or less since 1929.
Shh, a monkey's might fly out of my butt.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
We're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. You're talking to the coach, Ken Schulteis, Coach K right here, on a snowy, icy, wintry day somewhere in the mix in the Midwest, and it's headed to the East Coast, and then we're going to get some more on Sunday. And I'm not the weather guy, but, you know, there's a lot of people off school and staying home from work, probably listening to the Coach K and Joe Show, and could you blame them? Could you really blame them? And I wouldn't blame them, but I'll tell you what, we are the mailmen of internet radio sports talk. Because snow, sleet, ice, it doesn't matter. Coach K and Joe are here, and we're going to be talking some IU hoops in just a minute or so with Dustin Dporiak from the Bloomington Herald Telephone. He's the beat writer for the IU Hoosiers basketball and football. Great interview with Slick Weber, good friend of ours out of Jasper. Love talking to him. Of course, this is perfect weather. You know, one of our sponsors and great friends of the community in Jasper and the tri-state area, southern Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, is Ubelar and Sons. Tony Ubelar and his family of salespeople and technicians and people in the shop, they'll take care of you. And if you are needing to get around in the snow, get out there to Ubelar and Sons. I guarantee they'll have a vehicle for you. So the Hoosiers, they went out to Syracuse, and I think that a lot of Hoosier fans were looking for this rematch to be very competitive, and we were looking for this young Hoosier team to have grown a little bit through these early games in the pre-conference. And, you know, the tough thing about a young team is they're a young team, and every game, every competitive situation, every arena they go into is a new experience for them. I don't care how much AAU they've played. And folks, I got to tell you something. If you're an AAU supporter, I'm okay with that. And maybe you want to call in or text the show. You're more than welcome to do that. You can text me at 812-480-9449. But AAU is not game-ready basketball. And the Noah Vonleys and Troy Williams and people like that, that's what they're learning right now. And they got a big dose of reality of big-time basketball on the road at Syracuse. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the Hoosiers with Dustin Dvorak, and we're going to find out a little bit about where this team's at, where it's going. He's the beat writer for the Hoosiers for the Herald Telephone in Bloomington. And, Dustin, I believe you've joined us on the show.
I have. I'm on. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Dustin. It's great to have you. This is Coach K, Ken Schulteis. We were really excited that you were coming on the show, and I'll tell you why. I'm a Hoosier fan. I mean, I love the Hoosiers. I went to IU growing up, going into coaching, spent a lot of time sneaking into Assembly Hall to watch Coach Knight and his team's practice. Of course, the managers always caught me up in the upper level and kicked me out. But that did not stop me from continuing to follow the Hoosiers. And Coach Crean now has come in. He's had his taken his lumps for a few years. Obviously, a great year last year. Cody Zeller, Oladipo grows up for the Hoosiers. They have a great year. Not the year that everybody wanted them to end up having, but fans are fickle. We all know that. Cody's been on the show before, so having someone who follows the Hoosiers as yourself, it's great to have you. And I'm just going to jump right into it, Dustin. The Hoosiers go out to Syracuse. This is a young team. We're not going to make excuses for them all year, but in the preseason Big Ten, they're going to Syracuse. They're going into that dome. It is crazy there. A lot of Hoosier fans were disappointed, and yet I take the other side. What a great game to learn for these young guys to learn where they're at and where they need to go.
Yeah, I think what's I'm not necessarily going to counter you there, but that's actually kind of what Tom Crean was really upset about. You know, he personally just after the game was over. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen him as disappointed. I don't want to say he's disappointed in a loss. I mean, he has been in a lot of cases, but I mean, he was really didn't pull any punches on the guys and just came in and said, you know what, we had a real chance to learn something about ourselves here, and I don't feel like we did. You know, there were obviously occasions in the game where they looked pretty good. I mean, in the you know, certainly after they fell behind 10-0, and you know, just up until really the end of the first half, and even the first maybe two possessions or so of the second half when they came back and tied it, they looked pretty good. It's just that next stretch there, they just totally fall apart. And what bothered Crean is that he said he felt like we didn't have, you know, he said, quote, you know, we didn't have the fight, we didn't have, you know, communication wasn't there. He said he was disgusted in those things, and he said that's what bothered him. He said, you know, you don't get this opportunity. This team is not going to get this opportunity again because this is their only road game, their only true road game of the year. They're going to leave, you know, Assembly Hall for Notre, you know, to play Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic at Indy, and they obviously had the New York tournament with Connecticut. But this was their only road environment where they were going up against a truly hostile crowd, against, like you said, a top five team. You know, they're a really young group. They face the Syracuse team coached by, you know, Jim Boeheim. They go against this 2-3 everything. And he said, you know, we were in it. We were in it. We had a shot, and then we didn't. And then we just didn't, you know, we didn't necessarily believe that we could win the game. He says, I really want to know what would have happened if we went in that second half believing we could win that game. He says, because I just don't think we did. And that's what bothers him. And I think he would take a tact that you're saying that, like, hey, you know, you find out about yourself in a game like that. You find out, okay, what can we do well? What do we do not so well? You know, where are we as a team? What's our identity? Where do we stand right now, compared to other teams in, you know, in college basketball? And he said, you know, I don't feel like we got a measuring stick from this. I don't feel like we really got a good idea of who we are just because we didn't go at it hard enough in the second half to really, really find out. So, he's probably extreme on that. I mean, I think he was just really upset after that. Maybe if you look back at the film, they got a better idea of who they are. But that stretch, I think, really, really bothered me in that sense that they could have found out more. They could have got a real idea of what it was like really being a game, really being a fight with a top five team. And I don't think he did not feel like he got that after the game out of that game.
You know, I can understand, Dustin, that anger, that disappointment, because as I watched the game, I saw this young team running up and down the floor, hanging in there, using some of their athletic ability more than their basketball skill early to hang around. I thought that Syracuse was very sloppy and undisciplined in the first half, But I really felt that mentally it might give the Hoosiers a little bit of a lift. But as Coach Crean was upset at the end of the game, I understand that, because the second half, it looked like the physical part of the game changed in that Syracuse with their experience, although they're not an extremely experienced team, their experience, their overall ability on the court, they got themselves settled. They settled into that zone defense. IU was able to cause them some problems moving up and down the floor early in the first half. IU didn't get that opportunity in the second half. And we started standing with the ball. And you know, coaching on the high school level, taking teams into the Terre Haute South and the North and the New Albany's and different places like that, those are your gauges on the road to find out where you're at as a team. And this team looks like it still doesn't understand how to move that basketball from side to side, to skip it, to break down defenses. But, Dustin, one thing I noticed, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, and maybe Coach Crean talked a little bit more about this, I really thought, and the segue into this is your comment, that Coach said we weren't sure we could win that game, or we didn't believe we could win that game. I wonder if our lack of leadership, not on the bench from a coaching staff, but once you enter the playing floor, kind of showed up. You know, Yogi has so much to do out there. He's still a young player. Is he able to lead and play? If people can understand what I mean by that, is he able to multitask out there yet? Will she, he? It seems like if things aren't going well for him when he's shooting the ball, if things aren't going well that way, his game kind of drops off, and so does he mentally. This team has to have some leadership on the court when things get difficult. Are we even close there, or are we in a real struggle, a learning process yet?
Yeah, Tom, that was one of the things Tom addressed, and that was probably his most sort of, the word bold's not it, but, I mean, you know, kind of his just really sort of toughest statement against this team. And he said, you know, he said, I feel like the leadership took a step back tonight. He actually said he was disgusted with it later. You know, obviously they don't have a lot of guys that are in position to be that guy to begin with, because there are, you know, it's six freshmen and 10 sophomores, you know, and four sophomores. I mean, 10 of the 13 guys. I mean, you know, then you throw Austin Etherington in there as a redshirt sophomore. So you're really looking at 11 guys in those two classes. No, but no juniors, two seniors, one of which is a transfer in Evan Gordon. So, you know, I obviously, you know, he was pretty upset by it. Again, there's not a lot of guys in position to do that, and certainly Yogi, you know, having been a starter, is a guy that should be a little bit maybe better at that. But, yeah, I mean, it isn't easy if you're the point guard sometimes to do it, you know, but it's also not easy if you're Will Shee sometimes to do it, because he's a guy whose, you know, best attribute, I guess, is kind of getting lost in the game and running around in circles and kind of beating somebody to a spot and getting a layup or something like that. But, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's more that's incumbent upon Will to do stuff, because, I mean, he's got the personality – you know, to drive people, really. I mean, he gets in people. He's really capable of getting in, you know, somebody's face and saying, hey, we got to do better than this. So I don't really know really what went wrong with him, I guess. I mean, it seemed like a lot of things that Crean said were sort of directed at Will. And I'm sure, you know, this last couple of days of practice, I mean, he probably found out a lot about what Crean expects from him going forward, and in probably not so nice terms. So, you know, I don't know what it is about those guys that what they need to really find it. You know, certainly they haven't had to do it in this program yet, and that's going to take a lot. But, you know, she was in a different role last year, and also was in, you know, he was a different type of guy. He could be something. I mean, I think he was a leader on last year's team, but he could lead in a different sort of way. He was kind of your attack dog. I mean, the thing about Will is Will's abrasive. And Will gets after you. Will gets in your face. But, you know, there were sort of more, I guess, benevolent captains, you know, on that team, guys like Jordan Halls and Oladipo and even Cody on some level. You know, I wouldn't say Watford so much, and, you know, Elston, and, you know, there are a lot of guys that could play kind of that brought together kind of a whole, you know, leadership sort of contingent and all kinds of different personalities. And Will is, you know, Will has to learn just to be a different type of guy. But it's like it's kind of all on him, whereas last year there was a whole bunch of different guys to say something to get in somebody's face to make a point. It didn't have to be Jordan Halls all the time. A lot of other guys could pick up the slack, Will being one of the guys among them. in this case, it's kind of, you know, Will is the only guy who's really, really been there a lot, and I think he's an extremely smart basketball mind, and I don't think he really knows, though, what he's supposed to be, how often he's supposed to do this. And I, you know, I think part of it too is just I don't think anybody was doing anything well enough to call somebody else out last night. I mean, I don't know that anybody was doing enough to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm obviously doing well in this. I've obviously figured out you guys got to follow me. You know, Sheehy had a couple mess ups, you know, early on. I mean, I think he dropped the alley oop. You know, he had it right underneath the bucket and didn't get it. Well, maybe he got in his own head. I don't really know, but. One way or another, a lot is apparently incumbent upon Sheehy. You really got the impression that Kareem was talking to Sheehy a lot in that post-game press conference, and I'm interested to see how that plays out the rest of this week going into this North Florida game going forward.
Yes, if you just joined us, we're talking with Dustin Dporiak. He's the beat writer for the Hoosiers up in Bloomington. Dustin, I think, again, you segue right into my point. One of the things I noticed when I or learned when I was coaching and Michael Lewis, who went on to be the all-time assist leader at IU, is assistant at Butler. He played for me at Jasper. And one thing that Michael Lewis could do, Scott Rowland could do, different players I've had, sometimes, and I thought you made a great point, leaders have to kind of compartmentalize. They may be playing well or they may not be playing well. And they can't just say, I'm a leader and I'm going to get on these guys when I'm playing well. A leader is a leader, good, bad, or ugly. It's kind of like a shooter. You shoot when you're hot, and you shoot to get hot. And so I think that's one of the things that this young Hoosier team has to figure out. I've got a text message here, Dustin, for you. They're asking, do you think Evan Gordon raises up to become a leader on this team?
I don't know yet. I mean, the thing is, I feel like I still know so little about Evan as a person. I guess, I mean, just obviously been following and covering Will, you know, for 3 years, and I've got to, you know, I don't want to say got to know him pretty well because Will's not the guy who lets you get to know him all that well, but, you know, was able to kind of, just did a story on him this offseason, you know, leading into the season, to really get a better idea of what he's all about. And Evan, I don't know so much. I mean, he seems like a quiet kid to me. He hasn't necessarily been in that situation, you know, in the past, you know, at Liberty and Arizona State. And I think it's tough for a transfer kid when you've been bouncing around. You know, it's probably the same, you know, as you know, when you're in high school or in elementary school. Like when you're a new kid on the block, it's difficult to figure out, you know, first off to fit in the first place and then to try to lead is a whole different ballgame. And, you know, when he's been bouncing around, this is his third school, his third college. You know, and even going back, I mean, he did a year at prep. I mean, he's bounced around so much. He's been all over the place. Like, it's just not easy for him for a guy like that to really find your bearings and start telling other people what to do. You're still figuring out what you're supposed to do. So that's not easy, but it's possible. I mean, certainly I think as a senior, he'll be expected to do something. You know, he's a guy that has at least been there on some level, knows what college basketball is about. I think Tom Crean would certainly like him to take that kind of leadership role, take that kind of stance. You know, I don't know when he's going to be ready for that. You know, I don't feel like I'm seeing it right now from him. I think, you know, Will certainly has more of the personality, certainly has more of the ability to kind of, you know, grip his teammates. But, I mean, Evan's been there only as long as the freshmen have. He's played longer in college basketball, but this system's still new to him. Tom Crean's way of thinking is still new to him. It's tough to feel like you're an extension of the coach on the floor when you're just getting to know the coach, too. So, I mean, I think it's possible. You know, I think, you know, maybe just, again, having that kind of experience that nobody else has, you know, not a lot of the other guys on this team, you know, he might eventually, you know, fill into that role. But I think that's kind of a big question. If he becomes that guy, it helps Indiana out a lot. And I think Tom Crean's going to try to push him into that position. Whether he ever really takes it, I'm not sure. I think it's very much an open question as to whether or not he can sort of join, you know, that crowd as a leadership guy. You know, again, it's not easy if you're in that position, if you bounce around that much, you're only in this for 1 year, to turn around and be that guy. We'll see, I think, if he's capable of it.
When you look at this team and, you know, there's no reason for everybody to get too nervous. So we're 6-2, pre-Big Ten conference. A game like this gives us a little concern because when we're going up against the better teams in the country, where do we fit? Where does the Big Ten fit in the national climate? Obviously, the ACC Big Ten Challenge, the Big Ten finished 6-6 in it. One of the things that came out in that Syracuse game, Dustin, was I use perimeter shooting. It may be the albatross in the room, the elephant in the room, so to speak. When we see these teams that are a little longer, that are a little stronger, like a Syracuse, a little more athletic, and they start to defend post play, and Noah, who I think Bonley's just been, I just think he's done a great job for a young freshman. What do we do? Is this team as poor a perimeter shooting team as we saw against Syracuse, or was this just everything coming together mentally and physically to make that tough night in the dome?
It's a little better, but not a lot. I mean, going into that game, they were only shooting 28% from three. So it's not like this is an anomaly. It's not like you've seen them have one of those, you know, lights-out shooting nights. I mean, there's a reason they recruited three shooters in the next class. I mean, that's what all three of those guys can do, James Blackman, Robert Johnson, Max Hetzel. You know, all those guys can shoot it. And there's not a lot of guys on this group that can't. I mean, they really lost a lot of – you know, out of all, you look at the percentage they lost shooting, you know, of scoring and rebounding, whatever, but probably I think the most glaring thing that they lost, I mean, the percentage of three-point shots that they lost, you know, in last year's group is overwhelming. You know, I mean, it's humongous. And they didn't get a great shooter. Colin Hartman's a pretty good shooter, but, you know, he's just a catch-and-shoot guy. He's not going to get the type of minutes you're going to need. Out of the guys, they're going to be out there all the time. You know, the only guy that's really figuring it out right now is Yogi Ferrell. You look at how far he came. I mean, that's kind of the, you know, the, I don't say paradox of it, but, you know, he went from being a 30.3% shooter last year and really had a really tough stretch from outside to this year. He's the only reliable guy. And you know, you look at them, I don't think anybody else hit a three last night. Not last night, Tuesday night. I mean, Yogi Ferrell, I think, was the only guy who hit any. He was 4-for-7 from three, and nobody else hit those shots. And, you know, no, there's not anybody you can really rely on. We'll see. He's okay. Jeremy Hollowell's okay. From time to time, he'll get you one. But there's nobody else. I mean, there's not a Jordan Hollis on this team, and there's not a Christian Watford on this team, and they're not walking through that door. They're going to be, you know, they're going to hit some threes, but no, I mean, and Tom Crean even said it going in. He says, we'd be, you know, it's ludicrous to think that we'll be able to shoot over them, and that was what made it really difficult. In the 2-3, I mean, Syracuse knew they had to get it inside. That they knew that was the only way Indiana was going to beat them. I mean, they closed out on threes, but they didn't have to. That's, you know, that's what makes it really difficult against a 2-3 when you don't have to spread it out. If you're, you know, if you're hitting three-pointers and they have to really close out on you and they have to really, you know, honor and respect what you're doing out there, you know, then it spreads it out a little bit. I mean, then you get a little more room to work inside because you're dragging the top defenders outside. You know, Indiana wasn't the case they could do that. I mean, Syracuse knew that the goal was going to be to get the ball to Vonleh every single time. And they were still able to do it pretty well. But that was going to be it. They knew they were going to try to drive against him and get into Vonleh. They weren't going to have to respect the three-pointer as much, and that's what made it certainly more difficult in that game. I mean, I think, you know, against man-to-man, they'll be better. I mean, because it'll be easier to get the ball to Vonleh. It'll be easier to drive the ball. I think they're obviously very good at that. They've got a ton of athleticism. They can offensive rebound, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there isn't a day on the horizon when you're looking at saying, okay, well, this team will be a great shooting team going forward. Again, there's only a couple guys that really had that, even in high school, were good three-point shooters. I mean, Wilshere, he's more of a mid-range guy. He certainly has a three-ball in him. He can hit it on occasion, but it's not necessarily his game. Jeremy Hollowell kind of the same way. I mean, he had some days, I think, when he really went off as a three-point shooter in high school, but, like, Troy Williams isn't necessarily that guy. Evan Gordon is an okay three-point shooter, but not great. You know, Vonleh can hit it every once in a while, but not, again, it's not really his game either. So, you know, the only guy you're looking for right now that you can say, you know, consistently can shoot the three-pointer right now is Yogi Ferrell, and that's just because he worked his butt off to get there this offseason.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. He did. I mean, it's amazing how hard Yogi Ferrell worked to improve that perimeter shot, and now he's got it. And because he doesn't have anybody else to really help him, they're going to close out on him a lot. It's going to force him back into that penetration. We just got to hope there's some opportunities for him to dish that ball off to Vonleh and different guys and get that up there. Of course, it'd be great if Colin Hartman, I know for the Indianapolis listeners, would be able to to get the confidence and knock that shot down, he'd find some minutes. You know, before we let you go, Dustin, let me ask you a question about Troy Williams. I really like this guy. You know, listening to Dan Dockage the other night, I think he sees a lot of potential in him as well. I don't think we've seen a breakout from Troy, obviously. We've seen glimpses of what he can do. When you're watching him play or practice or talking to Coach Green or listening to the coaches talk about Troy Williams, what's their feeling on him? What's your feeling on where this guy is at and where he can get to, not 2 years from now or 3 years from now, before this season is over?
Yeah, no, Tom Crean thinks he's going to be special, and I agree with him. And I think he's a long way to go from putting it all together. But the athleticism is beyond, if it's not beyond Victor Oladipo's just straight up athleticism, running, jumping, you know, length, ability, kind of combination of just being able to just do things athletically. If it's not beyond it, it's right there. I mean, his ability just to jump and really just get up there. Is phenomenal. I mean, it's really unbelievable. Like, you know, the reason people, you know, Troy Williams is the kind of player that's the reason, like, basketball writers started using the term Skywalker. I mean, that's what Troy does. He just gets up there and he just floats. He's, you know, it's pretty amazing. But obviously his game's a long way from complete. You know, he still has to figure a lot out. You know, he's not a reliable jump shooter at all. I think it's just the turnover ratio is pretty bad right now, even though, I mean, one of the things that he came in that his coaches said were so great about him is he's such a good passer. And I think he's a pretty good one, but he's made some, you know, not great decisions. His handle's not great. And again, his jump shot's not great, but, you know, there's just so much raw material with him to work with. And you feel like you look at him, just his ability to really spread out on a guy defensively, and you're like, you look at it and say, you know, the raw material's there. If you can really get him to understand defense, he can be, you know, maybe not quite as good as Victor, but he's got that. Again, it's just tough to get the ball around him because he's got so much length, so much wingspan. So there's going to be so much he's going to be able to do. I mean, I think what, you know, and Tom Crean was even saying, you know, we're going to get to be better shooters because Victor, you know, Victor was a 29% shooter at this point last year. He ended up at 44, 45. And he was up in the 50s, and he was one of the best, you know, field goal percentage shooters in the league. Well, that was because Victor worked on it for 3 years, and it finally clicked. You know, it finally all came together for him. But they were waiting for that breakout freshman year, sophomore year, and it finally happened junior year. So it's going to take a long time of spending time in the gym for Troy Williams before it really all comes together. But I think he can certainly be a better player this year. I think he can be a double-digit scorer. You know, but I think he's the guy that can average, you know, 10 and 5 or 6 or 12 and 5 or 6, through the course of a game. He can, you know, if he doesn't take dumb shots, he's the guy that can shoot somewhere around 50% just because he's just always going to be able to throw it and, you know, at the rim. And it's really just an impressive ball skills at the rim. You know, watching him just make a, you know, when he drives baseline and does that sort of reverse layup thing, it's a thing of beauty. But, you know, he's going to have a chance to be really good this year, but going forward is even the bigger thing. When he really kind of puts all the pieces of his game together and really adds and develops certain things that are not part of his game right now, he's got a chance to be, you know, a big, big-time NBA player. I mean, he's going to be a guy that's going to get drafted down the line, but he's just still, before he leaves college, he has a lot to develop in his game before he gets there, and he certainly kind of, you know, fits that Victor Oladipo track, and the question is, does he have that kind of, you know, work ethic that Victor has when he really spent every single day in the gym and worked his butt off every single day, to learn, you know, to get things like defensive tenacity that he doesn't have yet, and again, the jump shot and, you know, the handle, all of those things. They're just not there for Troy right now. But if he puts the time into it, you know, people have shown that you're capable of adding that to the athleticism that Williams certainly has.
You know, Dustin, and we'll let you go in just a minute. I just love talking to you about this stuff because you're getting to see him every day pretty much.
I'm not. Noah Vonleh, I'm always doing the games, but sure, go ahead.
Yeah, Noah Vonleh, here's a guy. I got to tell you, just from the first week to now, and I know he's got some holes yet. His upside, again, is great. The bad thing about Troy Williams and Noah Vonleh, the great thing is there's their upside. The bad thing is they got to play now. But Noah not only rebounds, and he can score underneath, and he can dunk it, and he can jump. But, you know, the guy has the confidence as a freshman to step out to the three-point line once or twice in a game and take that shot. He's got, one of my concerns about him from a coaching standpoint was, can he put the ball on the floor? He's not great at that yet, taking two or three dribbles to make the move to the basket, but he's willing to do it in games. And I'll tell you what, I think that's really important for a freshman like that who doesn't just try to rest on his athletic ability. He's trying to expand his game in the games right now. What have the coaches talked about, and how do they feel about Vonleh at this point?
Oh, they love him. An interesting point I heard you talking before I got on about, you mentioned AAU a little bit. And I think one thing that really kind of stands out to me about having, because, the first time we saw him was summer of 11, I think, when – I'm sorry, summer of 2012, I guess, when he came into the AAU, the Adidas Invitational in Indianapolis with his team Mass Rivals, coached by a guy named Vinny Pastore. And he was bringing the ball up a lot of the time. And I think kind of just a real quick point on AAU, it's all about your coach. How much you get out of it is all about sort of, if you've got a coach who's really involved and knows how to teach skill to you in the summer, it goes a long way in terms of how much you can get out of it. Just playing the games, I think, helps. I think you're right in certain circumstances that it is not real complete basketball. It's not the same as high school ball. It's not as regimented. It's not as, there's not as much room for skill development because you're just constantly playing games all the time, and with a bunch of guys that you maybe don't know so well. But if you have a coach that can really even put you in positions where you learn things, you can get more out of it than a lot of guys do. There's a big gap between, when it's bad and when it's good, I guess. When you get a guy who really knows how to teach you in the summer, it does all that much more because you're really learning year-round. I think Pastore really let him do that because, again, he was bringing the ball up and he had a really good handle and he could shoot threes. And, that was one of the things he did. That's what stood out about Vonleh at the time was, hey, here's this 6'9", 6'10 kid who can bring the ball up and can handle it and can pass and can shoot. So he didn't just get this. This isn't something that he just developed under Tom Crean. The Tom Crean said, hey, I want you to have guard skills. He came in with that. So, I think that impresses them even more. That was another reason that they were just head over heels for him when they were recruiting him, is that he had all those things. And we even asked him, what is Noah Vonleh going to be? Because, especially coming in, he put on a lot of weight and size in the offseason. It's kind of mind-blowing. It's the same kind of as what Cody Seller did his freshman year, just going into his freshman year. He went from being really, kind of a beanpole to 230. That first year that Zeller was there, and Vonleh was not, I don't want to say similar because he was never really that skinny, but, by the time September, October came around, they're like, wow, we don't have to put anything more on him. He's jacked. He's humongous. He put in 15, 20 pounds, so really that was, he had to do less developing the perimeter skills than he did the size, but the size came along really, really fast, and you look at him now, and he's just sculpted. He's humongous. But he's got all those things together. And what Tom Crean always says about him is that what strikes him is the humility that Vonleh has. He keeps saying, he knows what he doesn't know. He understands that he doesn't know everything. He's a sponge. He's really trying to pick up something from you every day and every day and every day. And that's what really gives him the potential for greatness is the fact that he doesn't come here feeling like, I've got these perimeter skills and I'm gigantic so I can do everything. He really wants to get better every day. He really, he's already in that same kind of, 24/7 mindset that Vonleh, that Oladipo was in and Jordan Hulls was in and Will Sheehy was in. That's just what they do is they're in the gym all the time. There was a really good story on SportsIllustrated.com saying about how obsessed Vonleh was as a kid. He was I think he said his parents took the whole family to Disney World and he didn't go. He was so upset. He didn't want to not be in a gym every day, and they literally dropped him off at the YMCA in Orlando, and he just spent every day in the gym, and he was happier, than he would have been. And he finally dragged him in. They went to Busch Gardens in Tampa at the end of the vacation, and he finally, went to the park with his family, but the rest of the week he went to, while they were in Disney World, he was at a YMCA just playing basketball with guys. He just cares about it that much. So, you're seeing him develop and you're just seeing him just really just become a pro right before your eyes. The thing about it is, I mean, that's the one thing for Indiana fans. He's just not going to be around very long. And I don't know if it's going to be after this year or after next, but he's not going to spend 4 years in Indiana. You know, there's no chance. I can't imagine it. But in that time, you're going to see a lot of growth for him. And you see where he's at right now. I mean, there's a lot that he does that's pro-ready. He's just, again, all the skills he's developed. His ability to rebound is something else. It's not just the size and the ability to box out, but he's just got a knack for the ball. You know, he's just got everything you could possibly want as a rebounder. It's amazing. He's, you know, again, averaging a double-double. So, you know, all those pieces are really coming together for him. And you know, he does have the mentality to grow the right way. And, you know, also all of that, you know, Tom Crean couldn't be happier with him so far.
Great stuff, Dust. I tell you what, he's got all the intangibles. And then you just confirmed what I've been seeing, and that is that this guy is a sponge. He doesn't just want to play. He wants to learn. He wants to develop. And I would encourage our listeners, our IU fans, watch him. Don't just watch the score or who shoots. Watch him play. Watch what he's willing to try to do on the court to become a better player, which makes the team better. And if this team could do one thing that I really think would help them, is they've got to learn to move that ball from side to side, skip the ball, force the defenses to move, especially the good ones when we get into the Big Ten, to break them down a little bit so we can get those easy feeds into the bucket or the back cuts or the guard cuts down the middle. This team really has to learn to move the ball. Dustin, thanks for being with us. You can follow Dustin Dporiak on Twitter, at Dustin Dporiak. Great stuff. Beat writer for the Hoosiers for the Herald Telephone in Bloomington. Thanks a lot for joining us, and I hope you come back.
Absolutely, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Loved having you. Great stuff. Hey, guys, the Hoosiers are going to – we're going to have some fun nights with the Hoosiers. And, boy, we're going to have some tough hangover mornings after watching them play. And nobody hates that more than Coach Crean. I think Dustin told us the best. We had a little gap in recruiting. We got the centers and the power forwards, and we got the potential three men, but we didn't feel some gaps with some shooters. We think we're doing that. Let's hope that we have enough of everything back after this year and into next year and the following year to make a difference. Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. The snow is melting away, at least around Coach K, because there's a lot of heat coming off this place, not just from my voice, but from our topics. So stay with us. We'll keep you warm. We'll keep you fuzzy. And we might even get you agitated. When we come back, we'll be talking with Kurt Gooksell, WBDC Sports Director. We'll talk some ACC Big Ten Challenge. We'll talk probably some Alabama, because I am so tired of Alabama fans complaining that they should still be up there. And probably talk a little Southridge Raider basketball. We're going to go to break. You are listening on this snowy day, but we're warming it up to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Uvalar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles, cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories. And they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Uvalar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? We'll team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Pardon me, do you have any gray poupon?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis, and we are now joined by DC Broadcasting sports director and sports aficionado Kurt Guxell. Kurt, are you warm in your house, or are you at WBDC slaving away?
I am slaving away. Well, what else would you expect? Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today? Hope everybody is getting along on this fine winter day.
You know, Kurt, the great thing about internet radio is you can tell us you're slaving away, just like Joe says he's working hard where he's at. Mm-hmm. And we don't know because we can't see him. I know Joe is probably kicking back, eating some Eggo waffles, playing a video game on the side, talking to his kids. So if we have any technical difficulties, Kurt, it'll be because Joe's went to the bathroom or something.
Hey, you should know by now, broadcast broadcast entities 24/7, 365, especially on a day like this when people need to know stuff. We don't usually have all the answers, but they think we do. So,
Kurt, I got several topics that I'd like to touch base with on. And you know, if you want to get a little heated and melt some snow around you, that's fine. And if you want to be cool and calm about it and politically correct, that's fine too. But I'm going to start out. Hey, we just had Dustin Dvorak from the Herald Telephone in Bloomington. He's the Hoosier beat writer. Did a great job talking about the Hoosiers. And I'd like to start right there, not necessarily with the ineptness of the second half for the Hoosiers against Syracuse. I think most of us figured that was probably going to happen at some point in the game. The fact that we kind of fell apart as a group and went our separate ways, I could understand why Coach Crean was pretty upset. But what I really want to touch base with you right now is the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It ends up 6-6. And at one point, the ACC was eating the Big Ten's lunch. But on Wednesday night, the Big Ten came back, went 4-2 against the ACC. Your thoughts, is the Big Ten a good conference? And when I say a good conference, I know it's a major conference. Is the Big Ten a good conference? Is the ACC a good conference, or is the Big Ten good 1-4 and the ACC good 1-4?
You know, a lot of people talk about these challenge type of deals, and they base how good a conference it is on these games. Sometimes it's just about matchups. I mean, it seems like some teams in this challenge on either side, ACC, Big Ten, have great matchups for them or get to play easier teams. It seems like the big boys are always paired up against the big boys, so those games are usually a wash. But I think both leagues have good teams. I mean, I like the Big Ten in basketball. I mean, you go down that line there, you know, with Michigan State, although, you know, they lost their game. You know, they weren't playing Miami or Florida. They were playing Carolina or, you know, it was just a matter of who you play. And Ohio State, they're very good. Wisconsin, they're going to be a good team. I like the Big Ten. But, you know, I like several teams in the ACC, too. I mean, you start with Duke and Parker and all the guys that they got, and it looks like Carolina is going to be really good. I don't know about these two guys that have done knucklehead things that are still suspended, but after beating Louisville and Michigan State, maybe they don't need those guys. You know, so to answer your question, I think both conferences, obviously, down through the years, they've both been great, and I think, you know, fans of those two leagues are going to see the same thing out of there. I mean, what are your thoughts on – I think it's a matchup-driven thing. It's kind of like the football, you know, everybody, the Southeast Conference is the best conference in the country. You know, is it, or is it just top-heavy, or is it just the few teams that are pretty good? So I think it's like matchup-driven.
I would agree with you, Kurt. I think it is matchup-driven. I still do struggle, though, a little bit with both conferences when you get past the halfway point, meaning 1-5.
Well, I like that.
I understand that, but we're talking about a conference that should be able to go into most places and pick up whoever they want. And the other thing is, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, I mean, I understand what you're saying. But when it comes to the NCAA tournament, a bunch of these teams are going to go get in. The question is, do they deserve to get in if they're just beating up on the bottom half of their conference? Is Ohio State one of the best teams in the country? I've watched them. I like them. I don't know. They're winning, but I just don't know if this is the Ohio State team we've grown accustomed to. Is Purdue beating Siena twice? They did play Boston College in the challenge. I mean, I'm not saying these conferences aren't conferences. I agree with your matchup statement. I'm just wondering about the bottom half of these. And you know, you beat up on them all year, and then you get a bunch of teams in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, like you mentioned Ohio State, and you mentioned any of these teams that play a bevy of these games at home against really, really bad teams. It's some of this stuff, it's a bad product. I mean, you know, everybody got crazy because I talked about Syracuse not leaving the Carrier Dome like they never do until January. You know, Kentucky's got this policy. They're not leaving Rupp Arena other than to play on neutral sites. I think that has a big part of it. I mean, for fans to go and pluck down money to watch some of this stuff, I don't know how good some of these teams are, how good the product is, because you just can't tell.
Yeah, I don't want to debate the Hoosiers too much in this segment, but I do want to bring up, I got to tell you, I was disappointed with the way the team, after about 2 minutes into that second half, 3 minutes into that second half, it just started to break apart. And you know, we talked with Dustin Dvorak a little bit. You know, I want to get your thoughts on it, but I really believe that Yogi Ferrell, Will Sheehy, have no concept yet. Now, if you get mad at me, listeners, if you get mad at me, Kurt, fine, I'm a big boy, I can take it. I don't think they have any concept of what it is to be a leader. And I know they haven't been there before as far as on this team, and I know they've got – you have other responsibilities on the court. And it doesn't matter if you're shooting well, defending, you still have to be a leader on the court. And I really believe that they went in five different directions 3 or 4 minutes into that second half. You know, Will Sheehy can't say, well, I'm not hitting, so I can't be a leader. Baloney. Yogi Ferrell can't get so caught up in what he's doing with the basketball or whatever and not be a leader. There's multitasking to be done in basketball. Five guys, they got to play multiple ends of the floor and multiple pieces of the floor. I think this team really has to do a gut check and find a leader out there that when things start to crumble with these younger guys, they can pull them back in.
Oh, there's no question about it. And I think the point guard needs to be a leader on no matter what team you play. We've talked about this, whether it be the quarterback, the catcher, the point guard, in all the different sports. And I'm disappointed that Sheehy hasn't been more of a guy that brings guys together, because you know, he's not a 25-point scorer, and people think he's going to be or was going to be just because he's a senior and older. They're missing the boat there. But he could bring more to the table because he's seen the good and the bad. And those brothers, whether he develops into that, that's key to this team. Other nights, he didn't. Farrell, he's a sophomore. But if you're a sophomore, if you're going to point guard and your team's got to be a leader. That a lot of people don't understand, it was a big summer of freshmen coming in, whether they came in for school or, you know, later in the summer. Ferrell and Sheehy played on one of those Junior Olympic or these, you know, teams against full competition. So going around to lead some of those guys in some of those summer workouts, they were on for like a month. And not only when they were around to, I think some of their development got stunted because they were in more of a team situation with that Junior Olympic team that they played on, instead of working on maybe some leadership or working on individual skills or working on getting stronger. I think it's a great experience to do that for you, but I think you miss out on a lot of stuff, and I think maybe those guys are a little bit behind, and maybe that's something that they can build into. But you're right, they splintered, and you splinter against a team like Syracuse, it's going to be a long night. So, you know, I definitely think leadership is a big part of what they've got to improve on.
Kurt, I just got a text, and the person asks, will IU ever learn how to play against a zone?
Well, you know,
I don't know if that's fair to ask it in that general question, but your thoughts.
I want to hear what you say as well. But my thing is, and it dates back to the game last year, I think that zone gets too much credit for the way teams, win or lose against that team. Indiana's problem that they couldn't even get into stuff because they were turning the ball over. Same way last year in Washington. You know, if that 2-3 zone was so great, Syracuse would never get beat. The Navy triple option is that was so great that teams couldn't play against it, they'd never get beat. I just think Indiana's problem was getting into stuff. But I do, if you're going to you know, say that the 2-3 zone is what it is, and it's hard to play against, I will say, and you guys talked about it with Dustin, and if this is on Crane and his staff, you got to have somebody out there that can get in that short corner. If you can get somebody in the middle, and more importantly, get people on those wings that can shoot the ball. And there's no excuse in this day and age with shooters all across the country, with all across the state, for them not to have a shooter. I can say a guy like Matt Ropp would be in that starting lineup right now against a team like Syracuse and knock down some of those shots. I that's one thing that does make me scratch my head about the problem is not having a shooter on board. In some, supposedly. But, I'm just a broadcaster talking. You're a coach. You've attacked a 2-3. You've had success against a 2-3 or a 1-3-1, and you've had nights when you weren't. What do you think on that? Am I all saying that maybe it's not as big a deal as what people play it out to be, and that's just an easy thing because that's what the guy on TV says that's a problem, that they can't play against a 2-3 zone?
Well, Kurt, first of all, you brought up a great point that maybe a lot of our listeners have forgotten, and IU fans, Roth, they may have wished that they would have let Matt Roth come back for another year, seeing as the shooting
well, that was last year, yeah.
Yeah, the shooting that they lack. You know, this zone situation is real simple. Some nights you attack it well and some nights you don't. You can mentally psych yourself out about it. I think these young guys mentally psych themselves out about it. But here's the biggest thing I see. If you don't move the ball from side to side, you're not going to get into anything against a zone. You're not going to get the middle to get the low post, to get the baseline of the short corner, which you astutely talked about because that's a critical place to hit. If you hit that short corner, then you can hit that guy dropping to the basket from the elbow area. That's textbook 101, beat a zone. But you can't do that unless you move the ball from side to side. And if you just take the top of the key and you measure out straight out to the half-court line from the elbow to the other elbow, that's not moving the ball from side to side. And, Kurt, how many times, IU listeners, how many times, IU haters that watch the game like Joe, how many times did IU try to force that ball into the middle from the top of the key elbow area and it got stolen by the length of the teeth of the defense, which they want you to do that. You break the zone down by moving the basketball from wing to wing, skip it, hit the elbow or hit the wings opposite short corner, get the guy diving from the basket. You have to be patient to do that. I know you have a shot clock, but there's plenty of time in that shot clock to do it. IU's either too young or they're not working on that, or that's not an emphasis in their zone offense. I still think if IU could have kept from turning the ball over so much, Kurt, and just kept an up game with Syracuse, they would have been better off because once Syracuse started sitting in that zone, the Hoosiers just splintered. You used the term splintered. That's exactly what they did.
Well, I agree. And like you mentioned, the moving the basketball, rarely do you see in the last two meetings with Syracuse. It's a catch on the wing and return it right back to where it came from. How about maybe a couple of hard dribbles toward the baseline, pick up the ball, then go back around. Get it where those guys have to move in that zone where they think the ball is going to go, and then take it back another direction. Or a hard dribble. A lot of those guys that play in that zone, they don't like, even if a ball's taken right at them hard and then brought back out in reverse back again. Something that, you know, the thing about it is when you're on offense in any sport, you're the person in control. And I think a lot of times that Syracuse 2-3 or anybody's defense gets comfortable where they really shouldn't if an offense attacks it right. Again, I'm not a coach. I just watch a lot of games.
Well, I can tell you right now, the IU offensive players, Vonley, some of those guys, they're set up to beat a zone if you can get the ball to the short corner and drop. Can you imagine dropping Vonley from the elbow area, picking up a short corner pass? I mean, that's an automatic 2 points or a foul, but you have to be patient against a zone. Two things happen against a zone. You start hitting your three-pointer early, and you rely on it. I had a team that did that at Princeton one night. We took a 17-point lead at half. Andy Novlett, a few of the guys were on the team. They were hitting three-pointer early. We told them at halftime, guys, we got to move the ball. We got to get it to the short corner. We got to get it inside. We can't live out there. Guess what, Kurt? We wanted to live out there. We let Princeton come back on a cold, snowy Tuesday night and beat us at Princeton. Shouldn't have happened, but that's what happens. You rely on your three-pointer. Or secondly, you don't move the ball. You don't break the defense down. You make a zone look a lot better when you don't do those things. I think Joe has a question. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, caller John from Jasper wants to ask you guys something about Roth being on the team. Now, a viable option for IU this year would have been Maurice Creek, who is, and I researched this. They wanted to know if you thought that would have helped the team this year. And I did research, and Maurice is on a 7-1 team that beat a ranked team. He is 21 for 46 for 45% from three-point land and averaging 15.3 points. That was the question. Do you think Maurice Creek could have helped this team?
Well, Creek would have been done last year. Creek would have been done last year because he used last year when he left early in the season for his sit-out year, and then he's now at George Washington. And I did catch some of him. He played in one of those exempt tournaments. I think it was out at Fullerton for George Washington, and he's still limping around. He's a great player before he got hurt, and I don't know exactly. He is a dead-eye shooter. He's getting a lot of looks in their situation, but he would have been done anyway. I was talking about a shooter that they would have already on, and I used Roth as another example because he wouldn't have been eligible this season either. Last season would have been his last year. But, I mean, it's a good question because, I mean, you look around and you try to search for any of those good players that are playing for those other programs that could help you. I mean, Butler's got a shooter. Indiana State's got a shooter. Evansville's got a shooter. You know what I mean? And they're not even at Indiana's level. But, you know, that's my thing with the shooters. It seems like everybody's got one, including, I guess, George Washington now. So, Coach?
Well, you know, I don't think he would have helped. I saw him play the other night.
Did you notice him limping around?
Yeah, he's still limping around, and I think on the Big Ten level, night in, night out, he wouldn't get the opportunities to just sit out there and shoot the basketball, and I think it'll be tough for him as the year goes on. But listen, Evan Gordon, we bring him in. Well, what did we bring him in for? Can he not shoot on the perimeter? What did we bring him in for?
His little brother's really, really good, and they want him.
Okay, well, I got to believe that.
Yeah, that's my excuse.
His little brother
needs to
either become a Hoosier because he wants to be a Hoosier and not because Evan Gordon comes in his 16th year at IU.
Yeah,
Jeremy Hollowell,
5'8". Yeah.
Will Sheehy. Dustin said he's not really a three-point shooter. I think he is. I just don't think he's hitting the shots. You got a guy like Etherington who is supposed to be able to shoot. He's not even looking to shoot. You got a guy like Colin Hartman. I know Don Schulteis, our contributor out of Indy, is not going to like me saying this, but here's a guy, if he could bring anything to the table at IU, it is to shoot the perimeter shot, because his last 3 years of high school, that's all he wanted to do was shoot the three. I like Colin Hartman, but Colin, if you want a chance to play as a freshman, it's sitting there for you. Get out there, work every single day shooting that basketball. Kirk, agree or not agree, there's his opportunity as a freshman to get on the court, shoot the three-pointer, and hit it.
Yeah, and work and get better at it. You know, you got a great conversation with Dustin about a guy like Conley who's constantly in there. They can get in that facility anytime they want. And that's the difference between the good teams, the good players. They turned Victor Oladipo into what he was, or some Jordan Holes into what he was. And I think it's out there for some of these guys. If you don't like the way it's going, which they didn't like the way that they got pounded at Syracuse, do something about it. That's for any basketball or any sports player. You got to go above and beyond what the practice that you're working as a team at. And I think that's going to be the key to the season. And any one of those guys can decide, you know, that that's what they want to do, because they're all there for a reason. They're all pretty good players, but do they want to go to that next commitment level and take care of it? So
I love what you said, Kurt. Working as a team. You know what? You're going to have nights when you don't shoot the ball well. You're going to have nights when your team doesn't shoot the ball well. But you got to keep working as a team. And I stand with Coach Green on how upset he was after the game. And I know that as the week, when he went into practice, you know, your emotions settle down, and now you focus on the educational part. And you get on their butts, I can guarantee you that, and you make them run a little extra and get on the floor for loose balls, and you do a little bit more of that. But you got to compete. And I think Coach Green, and I know myself and several others that I talked to after the game, we felt like we quit competing. And you said it, working as a team. When you work as a team, you compete. And there's nothing, for our listeners, there's nothing that infuriates or rags a coach more than when you won't compete out there on game night, because that's what you came to play for, and that's what you came to work for all week. So you know what? If you're not going to get it in a game, I can promise you this, if you're worth your salt as a coach, you're going to get it from them in practice. And I hope that the Hoosiers are a little angry, have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, a little mad, a little upset, and are willing to pull that thing together. But, Kurt, you said it best. Work as a team. When things aren't going well, work as a team.
And nothing better than coming off that Syracuse game than a visit from tough North Florida tomorrow night. You know what I mean? That's what I talked about earlier. You don't know where you're going, because it's going to be like this until they hit Big Ten play. But that's the way
college
basketball
is. Wouldn't it have been nice if they'd have come back with a fairly solid team to play, just to see what they learned from the Syracuse game, where they were at mentally, where they were at as a group? Wouldn't it have been nice to come back with somebody solid?
Well, they're going to get that in about a month. You know, so I mean, I look at it both ways. I understand that, you know, teams like Indiana, even I say stuff about Kentucky not leaving. And that's just the way the landscape is. You got to have those home games so you can have water polo. You've got to have your home games, and you've got a responsibility to play home games. But it's not fun for fans. I mean, but I think Indiana, Kentucky, Louisville, Purdue, they have a brand that even though they're playing bad teams, people are going to show up because they're fans of the program, and that's what the schools know that, and they can get by with that. But yeah, it would be great to see another nice game tomorrow, you know, or somebody even halfway remotely decent. But
It's kind of like playing the old pickup games at Gutzwaller's, and then you got to go down and play the tough guys, the older guys at the 10th Street courts outside of Recreation Field or Alvin C. Ruxer Field. Kurt, real quickly before we go to break, and you're going to stay with us because we're going to come back and talk a little football, but real quickly, one comment I'd like to make before we finish this segment. Kentucky made this mistake last year. They recruited a bunch of guys, but they didn't have anybody to run the floor for them. They didn't have a floor general. They didn't have a point guard. Let's face it, they didn't have it, and it hurt them big time. Indiana has a bunch of good guys, but they had a little gap in their recruiting for this year, and that was some shooting. I mean, some real perimeter shooting. It wasn't there because they didn't have it coming back, and obviously Oladipo leaving early didn't help, other graduation guys, but they didn't have it coming back. They didn't have it coming in. Kentucky didn't have it the year before. Even the great recruiters, even the really good programs, you run into that. You have a gap, and it really shows how important it is that when you got that list up on the wall, when you're trying to recruit, you got to make sure that you're filling the gaps in what your team needs, not just the most talented player, but where you need the skill.
Oh, I definitely think so. You see it with all the sports that you have to recruit in. You know, there's college football teams. We'll talk about football a little bit. They're voided at certain position, and it just kills you, especially if it is the quarterback spot. And but I don't show any sympathy for that because you're the one going out and getting the players. You're the one that has that board on your wall. You know what I mean? I feel sorry for the high school guy that brings a team back that has no guys that can play. Well, who are the guys I feel sorry for? I don't feel sorry for guys that have a staff full of recruiters recruiting to a great place. Like recruiting to a great place like Indiana or Kentucky or Louisville. I mean, you're your own GM, you know. And I think sometimes you get full of yourself, and it always talks about talent corrupts. And you may like this guy that's 6'9" with long arms that can you give that last scholarship to, or you don't think a guy that perhaps can shoot can play. You know, it's all on the coaches in this situation. You know, in college basketball or college football. You're the guy. You're the evaluator. You're the guy that has the national letter of intent to give away.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to go to Kurt. Stay with us because we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I know I'd like to talk a little football. But the first thing we're going to do, I think Joe may have another question, and he also wants to jump on IU about some things. And we're going to return the favor with Purdue on a few things. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to get after it, folks. We've just begun. We got a half hour or so left. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he'd put on a dress and play a girl bunny?
No.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by Coach K, Ken Schulteis, and DC Broadcasting Sports Director Kurt Guxell. Guys, a couple of comments here before you guys get going. I know we're going to talk football a little later, so I want to get my comment in now. I watched last week, I don't know why, but I watched this War Eagle Roll Tide special, and I will tell you that the IU-Purdue football rivalry is such a minute little thing when you watch that. And, you know, hear about an Alabama fan killing Toomer's tree and all this kind of, and they're just, it's serious stuff down there. You know, I mean, it's serious stuff. We might rib on each other, but my God, at least we don't have to worry about losing life or limb if you cheer for the wrong team. But also, another thing that I was really wanting to talk about was, you know, I got to thinking about all the grief. I mean, and I know you guys are going to come back with the, well, what Purdue do? I'm not talking about what Purdue did or what we said, because we didn't say anything because we're not very good. Read all the message boards and all these people talk about how back when the movement was being recruited, that how I don't put you two in this category, but I do call a certain brand of IU Hoosier fan a Hill Jack. And the Hill Jacks were talking about three or four banners. I want to know, where is this progression? Other than Yogi, you know, slight bit of Howell, what has the movement done? Debate.
Joe, can I, when's the last time Purdue sent a guy to the NBA? We had two of the top picks last year.
Etwan Moore, Robbie Hummel, you want to go down the list, Carl Landry.
Rounders?
What? Yes, Carl Landry. Carl Landry and Etwan Moore. Well, I don't know if Etwan, he was up there. I'm not sure if he's high second, first round. Who cares? We're not talking them. I'm talking Peter Jerkin and Hanner Mascara Perea, who's like the greatest thing ever to play basketball ever at any university, and he's, you know, it's a failure. I hate to break the news to you guys, but he's a failure. You know, maybe he'll develop into something, but that's not what the casual Hill Jack fan was saying. They were saying how it was three or four banners, and they were talking, and I was laughing. They were talking about how Holes and all these guys are destined for the bench and all this. You know, I just kind of want to get where they're at. I'm trying to get a feeling for this. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to keep this rivalry up, kind of like the. I want an Alabama Auburn rivalry here. Come on.
You don't know. There's no doubt about that. And as I said, you would be in the bathroom today. Kurt, go ahead. Give him a response.
A lot of this movement talk was brought on by some of these players that had never stepped foot on a college campus. And one of them's at Syracuse now, and Ron Patterson, who is no longer even at Indiana.
And who also made the name stop the move.
Who did?
Patterson's the one that actually coined the phrase, the movement.
Well, right. And it's like, I agree, that was the stupidest thing that guys could have said. You know, do something in college first. But as far as those other guys, they have been disappointments. Because it's based on summer basketball and academy basketball and prep school basketball, Jerkin and Perea in highlight video, and I agree with that. But let's let this play out and see how it's going to work out later on. But I agree to a certain extent what you're saying about that, but I don't think the majority of people in the know were big talkers about this so-called movement, especially not me, because I can't stand half this recruiting talk, no matter which school it is, until guys actually show up.
And I would jump in and say, Kurt, I agree 100%. If you go back and listen to past shows, Joe, you know that I was not a huge fan of Perea or Jerkin, even in the early beginnings. I think Dan Dockage, who we have an on-and-off-again friendship. He'll block me on Twitter every once in a while. Don't know why you do that, Danny. He was critical of Perea early. He thought he was overrated. I think that people were watching the YouTube highlight videos, seeing the dunks, seeing them run up and down the floor, and if you haven't been there, if you haven't seen a lot of basketball like Kurt has, like myself, You don't understand that once you walk onto a court and you have to play on the half court and you have to play defense and offense and you have a guy on you that's just as good or older, it's tough. Listen, Jerkin is far from being a player. Perea is stiff. He's stiff. He needs a lot of work, but he has some athletic ability. And maybe in another year or two, that'll pay off for the Hoosiers, and it may need to because they may lose some of these younger guys after one or two years. So, Joe, in the end, IU will get banners. They're not going to get – the movement was true because Patterson moved on and went to Syracuse. So he coined his own movement. And Duke can only play Siena so many times. They can only play Siena so many times.
I just want to ask you one question. I haven't made you so mad that you're going to come kill Milligan Tree out in the front yard with some poison, are you?
That wouldn't be the place I'd put the poison, Joe. Hey, let's talk a little BCS real quick. Kurt, you love college football, and so does Joe, and so do many of our listeners. I got to tell you something. I don't know why Alabama has such arrogance that they think that if they lose a game, and I know it was a close game and it was a crazy loss to Auburn, and that those things just don't happen, but it happened. Why do they feel like they should always get the benefit of the doubt, which they have in the past, and get to be in that, back in that national title hunt the next week, 1-2, regardless?
I don't think that I haven't heard that they think that. I think that the big push is for Auburn to be that from down south to be to jump Ohio State. I haven't really heard much about the Alabama faction thinking they should be still thought of as a national championship contender, because I mean, basically that was the 14 playoff, and they lost Auburn. I mean, have you heard a big upswell for them to still think that they should be in the national championship game?
Oh yeah, yeah. I get on the boards and look at some of what the Bama fans say.
They were having a hard time coming to grips with what happened. I think that's part of it. Because when they walk up Saturday morning, that was the last thing in the world that they thought was going to happen. Not only the big run back, but them just losing in general.
And I it was the last thing that I thought I would wake up and known that somebody would run back a missed field goal against Alabama at the end of the game and nobody could tackle him. And then to do it excessively, the way they beat Georgia, I mean, it is kind of amazing. As much as you want to root for Auburn, you could easily say, hey, Auburn could have two more losses here. Ohio State, Florida State, we've got the quarterback for Florida State. He's now been expunged from any wrongdoing. At least the state is not going to file any charges. But this thing isn't over yet. I'm not talking about his situation. I'm talking about the BCS. We've got these conference championship games going on. Can Michigan State knock off an Ohio State team that has been, I mean, you talk about everything has to fall right. They lucked the game out with Michigan. They really did. I mean, it was a great game to watch. Football that Saturday was just awesome. They win that game. Alabama finds a way to lose. They jump into that BCS game. Does it all change, Kurt, at Lucas Oil Stadium? Does Michigan State really have the ability to shut down an Ohio State offense and win that game?
They have the ability to do it because their defense is really good. But I don't know how many offenses like Ohio State they've faced, and that's going to be the key. And I don't know if Michigan State can do some of the things athletically to Ohio State's defense, which isn't very good. It's a sieve. But Michigan State was able to attack it because of the personnel, and I don't think that's the way Michigan State plays. So, you know, that's why I want to see Michigan State against Ohio State's defense, but I also want to see how Michigan State's defense stacks up against Ohio State's offense, because that thing is a machine, that offense. I mean, Braxton Miller, Carlos Hyde, the guys they got on the outside. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that Michigan State can win that game. But what happens if that happens? Then Missouri beats Auburn. Should Missouri be the team that's in the two spot? And you would say yes, because they are the champion of the toughest conference. Here's what you got to look at. Okay, we're saying Ohio State wins tomorrow night. So the easy thing is Florida State plays Ohio State. Do you want to take two of the teams of the top five big boy conferences? I'm not talking about that American Athletic deal that Louisville and Central Florida is in. although they are BCS conference. No, I know what I'm saying is you want to take the two best teams out of perhaps the weakest of the five conferences we were talking about, the others being the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the AC. You know, you want to take two of the weaker conference champions in Florida State and Ohio State, or and re-put them in the championship game and not have the best team from the best conference in the title game to face Ohio State or Florida State. You know what I'm saying? How can you leave out Auburn or Missouri in favor of Florida State or Ohio State? I mean, you know, it's always been that the undefeated team gets in the championship game. Yeah, it's always been that gas was $1.50 a gallon, or we travel by train. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why we need the playoff, and it'll be nice to see that. Do you give Jameis Winston and Florida State, is there any chance Duke beats them?
No, there's absolutely no way. That's one thing they've done, and that's why they have a weak schedule just like Ohio State does. When they come out, don't leave any doubt in what they do. It's 35-0, and he's throwing touchdown passes, and they're shutting people down. That's why I think people are still giving them credit, because based on the eye test. Ohio State, guys, I don't know, early in the season, and it was a dramatic day for both these teams involved. Ohio State, on one play, beat Northwestern at the end of the game. And that set Northwestern into, like, six straight Big Ten losses. The Northwestern was right there, considering one of the top teams in the league. Ohio State barely beats them, sends Northwestern into a tailspin, and kind of gives Ohio State new life. Go ahead.
So basically, I mean, and you could make a case for it, Kurt. The top three teams in the country are Auburn, Alabama, and Missouri, somewhere in that order. And really, 4 and 5 are probably Florida State, Ohio State.
Yeah, but I kind of like Florida State a lot better than I like Ohio State. I give them more of, just cause like I said, the way they approach things, the way they've beaten people. But you're right there with Missouri, Alabama, and Auburn. You know, and Auburn, but it's Auburn. Just because they went on a fluke play, or they are two fluke plays, are they considered the top team? But everybody tells us they are because they've won the division in the Southeastern Conference because they beat Alabama. I mean,
The other thing I would add to that is, yes, they've won on two fluke plays. But you know what? They had to be in a position for that play to make that much of a difference. In other words, they were right with Georgia. They were right with Alabama the whole game. So I guess I could make the argument, and some of our listeners could make the argument, that we can call – it came down to a fluke play both times, but you've got to be in a position for the fluke play to make a difference, and they were.
And of course, and that's one of the greatest – they didn't win a conference game last year under Gene Chizik. Yes, but Malzahn comes in with basically the same guys and is undefeated or whatever in that conference other than a loss to LSU. So, I mean, it's great. I mean, this is exactly what everybody wants, this great debate with all these teams. And to a certain extent, you're going to get your answers tomorrow because all these teams got to play on the field.
Yeah, and for Ohio State fans, the Ohio State, you look at a Big Ten, you go past Wisconsin and Michigan State, there just wasn't much there. And as you said, they barely won a game against Northwestern at a time when Northwestern was playing, well, obviously before injuries and everything else, they were playing like a team that belonged in the upper half of the Big Ten. But then I think Mike Greenberg talked to him, gave him a pep talk, and that the season fell after that. But
that's your quarterback's getting hurt,
I just don't know where Ohio State really fits in, but I will say this. I can't wait for them to play a Florida State if they hold on. I can't wait for them to play Michigan State because I really think they have a solid offense. I really do. I think their problem is going to be defensively. And I don't know if – I think it's Coach Fickell, isn't it, their defensive coordinator?
Yeah.
I don't know if if he can get that defense in a position, well, to beat an Alabama, I'm not sure he could, or maybe even an Auburn. Florida State will pose huge problems for them if they get to that final game. Michigan State, we won't really know because, Kurt, you have to admit, Michigan State doesn't have a great offense.
No, although it is coming along. Cook has played himself into being a pretty decent quarterback. They were looking for a running back, but this Langford guy's coming along. So I give Michigan State a chance, but I don't know how much of a chance.
It'll be interesting. It really will. And I'm excited. Actually, I'm pretty excited about everything that's going on from NFL all the way down. I won't even bring up the Atlantic Coast East Division, Atlantic Division of the Eastern Conference in the NBA because that's a train wreck, but that'll be for a different show. I know you have a team in there that you love.
Yeah.
Let's talk Southridge basketball. We're in the basketball season. Tonight there's probably not going to be any basketball anywhere. But your early look at the Raiders, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's a weird situation for the Raiders, one that you might like, one that you might not like. With Gibbs-Southridge was supposed to open tonight, or open tomorrow against Gibson Southern, but a couple of weeks ago Gibson was in the football semi-state, so they asked to have the game postponed. So Southridge will be one of the last teams in the entire state of Indiana to open next week. So they don't have their opener until next week. And, you know, I think Jeremy Roush is looking forward to playing, but he's also kind of glad that they could go with a little bit slower pace in preparation. You know, now that they have just the 2 weeks to get ready in an official basketball situation, this allows him to go a little slower with the sets, with the defensive concepts, and work those guys. And you know how it was with getting football guys late. It was sometimes a crash course and going, because we got a game the next week or in 2 weeks. But I think it gives Jeremy, although you want to play, I know the kids really want to play, I think it may help them, you know, move along at a slower pace, which I think as a coach you would like that. But that's where Southridge basketball is right now before if you want to know about any specific players.
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of these teams appreciate the snow break. I know that the players are antsy to play, and maybe some of the coaches are ready to go too. But when you get that little extra time to practice, like you said, when you've got players coming in from football, you want them to put on that uniform. You want them to put on the practice gear. They are basketball players at that point, and you want them to be as fluid as they can get. It takes a while to get that shot, that touchback, smoothness in most of the kids. Your footwork is the same way as you're doing a lot of vertical. You're doing a lot of quick steps. It takes some time. So I think all the coaches really deep down will like that they have an extra week to work a little bit. You know, Kurt, girls basketball is in full, I mean, it's going forward, 4 or 5 games under people's belts. Any girls teams around the area that you have a lot of respect for, at least looking at and saying this is going to be a good team?
I think all 4 of our DuBois County teams have a chance to be pretty good because they're all well coached and they've got some returners back. Jasper struggled early, but they played a really good schedule. They opened with Southridge, lost in overtime on a putback, lost that, lost to Vincent Gervais, who's always good. And, Ryan, one of the better coaches around. He was kind of not knowing where they're headed. Next thing you know, they beat a good Memorial team with a lot of good players for their first win and kind of got them back on track. And talking to Ryan the other day, even though they dropped a few of those games, they had a 10-point lead in each one of those games. He goes, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing because we won, won a couple and lost a couple, but I think they're going to be fine. You know, they've got to, revamp their team from being a team with, in the last few years with a Megan Sternberg or a Shelby Murder to be a more perimeter team. And Southridge, they start 4 sophomores and a junior, and Greg does a great job with them. And Martin Yow's always good, her 19th year at the helm. And, of course, Spider, Monty's up in Northeast DuBois, they're going to be right there in the hunt because they're always well put together. So it's a good basketball situation for the girls around here.
We're going to be talking a lot more high school basketball in the coming weeks. Of course, Kurt will be with us and a number of other people. I want to thank our guests today, Kurt, of course, and Dustin Dporiak of the Herald Telephone, the IU beat writer for basketball and some football. I think we're done. I think we've melted all the snow. We can melt the ice. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show, and I'm throwing it back to my guy Joe, and he's going to take us home. Thanks a lot, Kurt.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Guys, great show, and we will see you all next week on the Coach K and Joe Show. I invite you. You know, there are hopefully, with the weather, I don't know if the games tomorrow night will be canceled or not. I will be at the Jasper Mount Carmel game if it's still played tomorrow night. So for Coach K, Ken Schulteis, and for Kurt Guxel, I'm Joe Milligan saying we'll see you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar & Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.